You know what you're listening to?
Is that a trick question?
It's the I Still Love This Game podcast with your host, Matthew Damien.
He's an idiot. Don't listen to he's an idiot.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 24 of the I Still Love This Game podcast. On today's show, we have a guest. We have Matt Hanley. And Matt, for some of you guys that are new to the show, Matt, and this is the second time Matt's been on the show, Matt actually wrote the foreword to my book, so he has a great basketball mind, and it's always a pleasure having a conversation with him. So, Matt, welcome back.
Hey, thanks much. I'm glad to be back.
I think I may have set the record just then for how many times I could say the name Matt in a sentence. But,
we could probably expand that a bit.
I prefer not to try that tonight. Some big news today with, Blake Griffin getting traded from the Clippers to the Pistons. And I'm sure everybody's got an opinion on it. And I'd like to hear your opinion. So what did you think of the deal? What do you think the motivations for the Clippers were in this trade?
Well, it's really weird, you know. They just signed the guy for 170 mil max contract in the off season, not maybe 5 months ago, and you know, I remember when he came to the Clippers, and it was like, you know, geez, they're Clippers, fortunes are looking up, and what was that, 2009. Of course, he promptly broke his kneecap and said out of here. But, geez, it's a bit of a shock, really. Kind of unexpected, considering that they're contending. And, I mean, he was supposed to be the face of the franchise. That was my understanding. And, wow, just gone. Like, it's a surprise.
I didn't see this one coming. I truly didn't. Because as you said, that he was meant to be the face of the franchise. In the offseason, they kind of had to choose between Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. And the players that they brought in were to complement Blake Griffin. You brought in Gallinari, obviously players like Lou Williams, Patrick Beverley, who's been injured all season. They were meant to enhance Blake Griffin's game. Now, I know he got injured again this season, but he was healthy again. And they somehow managed to keep their heads above water despite all the injuries, and they were contending for a playoff spot, not contenders for the title, but they were absolutely in the hunt to get a playoff spot. I could understand this trade 100% had they have lost 10 out of 11 games with Blake Griffin on the bench and they were out of the playoff contention. But now I'm looking at it, and I mean, you touched on this a second ago. They signed him to a max deal for an extended period of time. So what has changed in 3 months?
Oh, I honestly don't know. I mean, look, I know Jerry West, he came on board with the Clippers, maybe a couple weeks before Blake was signed. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for Jerry West. I mean, the guy, he built the Lakers. Mm-hmm. Both Showtime and the Shaq and Kobe Lakers. Yep. He then went off to Memphis, and he helped orchestrate that trade that brought Powell to L.A. and his younger brother to Memphis. Yep. And then he goes to Golden State, and, well, we all know what he's done. I mean, he's been involved with some of the most successful franchises, the most successful organizations in the NBA.
Yes.
So, you know, you got to think, if nothing else, they're in good hands. They must have a plan, even if it's a bit hard to discern from the outside. But you gotta wonder, the next shoe to drop has gotta be DeAndre Jordan.
Or maybe Doc Rivers. Maybe Doc gets fired midseason. I mean, would that surprise you?
Well, kind of. I mean, he has sort of navigated the multitude of injuries, so, you know, it's now that he's no longer a GM, you know, and he could focus on what he does best, you know, coaching.
I thought you were going to say commentating.
I just don't see a clear upgrade there. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Doc Rivers as a coach, but there's definitely worse out there.
Well, here's my counter to that, Matt. If they're looking to upgrade, then this trade's not an upgrade in terms of talent. It shows a clear direction, a clear path from where they're going. They're looking to rebuild. Trust the process, right? Which every team seems to be doing right now. That's not a top five or top six playoff team in either conference. They look to be tanking. And this
surprising.
This is just disappointing because they weren't that far off it. Now, I get there was some injury concerns with Blake Griffin and all of that. You know, you touched on this a second ago, where even his rookie year, he missed his entire first year, and then he played his second year, which was actually his rookie season. But his first year, he didn't play 1 minute or 1 second.
In the preseason he did, and he promptly, the first game, he shattered his kneecap. So.
Yeah, I mean, like,
Clipper curse.
Regular season game, right? So,
yeah.
But the Clippers are fully aware of that, and yet
I know they
signed
him to it. I know it sort of boggles the mind at this stage. I don't know what's changed, but when they signed him to that contract, I mean, my first thought is, look, he's talented. He's a great player.
Yeah,
but he's his problem is he just can't stay healthy. You know, he misses at least a quarter of every season. You know, he misses time in the playoffs, and it's really cost them some opportunities that they've had. So, in my mind, he's not a number one option. He just doesn't have the health, and health is, in a sense, a talent, a skill that you can't coach, you can't teach.
A lot of it's luck. A lot of it's like.
Well, yeah, I mean, that injury he suffered this year where the guy rolled into his legs,
yeah.
I mean, what are you going to...
It's just bad luck.
Bad luck, but it happens over and over and over again.
Sure.
Guarantee you he would get hurt in the playoffs this year. Maybe it is just the Clipper curse. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. All right. His contract was large, obviously. We talked about the numbers.
Yeah.
But so if they're looking to free up cap space in the future... So as you said, the next one's probably DeAndre Jordan, who's on a massive contract as well. Mm-hmm. If they're looking to free up cap room, what makes them think that they can sign somebody? I know LA's a big market, but guess who's playing across the road? The Lakers. And all of a sudden, they're the best team in LA again. And they've got a much better young nucleus of players with Ingram, with Kuzma, with Clarkson, with Randall, with Ball. A better coach. Well, that's
how are you going to leave the GOAT Lonzo Ball to the end? I know, but you went into like the sixth or seventh guy.
I forgot to mention the
LeVar would not be pleased.
The 20th
I'm sure
best
he's
point
listening.
Guard. Yeah, I'm sorry. I should have mentioned the 20th best point guard in the NBA right now.
Mario Chalmers?
Probably take Mario Chalmers over Lonzo Ball right now. Regardless, my point is, how do they expect to attract free agents when they have no nucleus there? And it's a second-rate team. It always has been, even when they were on top. It's always been considered the Lakers' secondary team. If you couldn't afford tickets to go to a Lakers game, you go to a Clippers game. And
speaking of that, I remember back in the day, the advertising campaign was, come and see the opponents, you know? Come and see Michael Jordan, you know, our team is so great. Don't just come and see the other guys, you know, because that's just always been the way
me.
The Clippers are. But you got to remember
Sterling. Yeah.
Yeah. The dark sucking, soul sucking, individual, that has haunted that, franchise for 30 plus years is gone. So you got to think. There's definitely worse spots you could go to. I mean, sure, it is still L.A.
Yeah, here's my counter to that. Who got them out of that era? It was Blake Griffin, and to a lesser extent, Chris Paul, but it really started with the drafting of Blake Griffin. That's the guy that was the catalyst.
It was there. They were on the cusp, but, you know, injuries at inopportune times.
I agree with that, but I'm saying, how do they plan on bringing in free agents to use that cap space? I mean, the Lakers themselves have found it hard to use a cap space. And all their talent has pretty much come from good draft picks. And
yeah.
I'm looking at the Clippers. how, if the Lakers can't attract free agents, then how are the Clippers meant to attract them?
Well, look, it may not be next year or the year after, but they're gonna, I trust Jerry West.
Yeah.
You know, he's shown over and over again that he's got the capacity, the capability, the knowledge. He's got everything. And I don't know. It sure seems a little funny now, but maybe in a couple, 2-3 years, you know, we'll start seeing some of the fruits of the labor.
I wish I had your positive outlook on this, because I'm just looking at it like they've got nothing left. What assets do they have? Okay, LA's a big market, but guess what? You're still the little brother to the Lakers. The Lakers themselves can't bring in talent. And then you've got you've got no real big free agents or marquee player to attract, hey, come play with Blake Griffin. Instead, it's now come play with Tobias Harris, who's a good player. He's played very good this year, but he doesn't have the same marquee as a Blake Griffin. And they gave up Chris Paul for relatively little. I mean, Lou Williams has turned into an absolute stud, I'll give you that. But nobody saw this coming. They kind of lucked out with that. And I do accept that Jerry West does deserve the benefit of the doubt with this. I just look at it, I think, boy, they should have got a lot more for Blake Griffin. It was like a fire sale when they didn't have to do it.
Yeah, well, it's very, it doesn't really make sense. Like, I don't see any reason why this had to be done now, but,
what do you think of the Pistons now?
Well, geez, that's a pretty nice front line. You know, what's his name? Drummond has been playing excellent, especially boards and blocks.
Here's a funny thing, right? As bad of a foul shooter as Drummond has been in his career, he's now the best foul shooting center that Blake Griffin's played with. Sorry, but go on. I just had to throw that in there.
Well, you know, it actually that should be a good fit, because Blake's got the ability to step out on the perimeter. Drummond is a beast. Mm-hmm. You know, throwback old school center right there. I mean, that guy, I saw a stat today. Drummond in 6 years has many 20 rebound games as Shaq had in his entire 19-year career. I think that's kind of cool. You know, this guy's
cool.
Just out there doing his thing.
As a rebounder, though, like, he could get boards. It wasn't a weakness, but it wasn't his dominant strength, though.
No, but you know, for a guy of his size, obviously he enjoyed getting the ball in the post and throwing it down on guys. But yeah, you know, I think we've had many conversations about Shaq's strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah. What I like is, I think Stan Van Gundy he's always been good at finding players' strengths and
mm-hmm. Oh, he's an excellent coach.
Yeah,
no doubt about it.
And building a nice strategy based off those strengths. Really, when you think back to even his Orlando days with Dwight Howard and how limited Dwight Howard was offensively, he was still able to come up with an offense that made Dwight Howard look like a semi-decent offensive player. So I think with the addition of a guy like Blake Griffin, who has, as you said, the ability to step out, he can post up, he's got a nice jumper, he's got excellent ball handling ability for a big man, he's a good passer as well. I think when you combine him with someone like Drummond, the sky may be the limit for this team if they can surround them with the right players. I'm not sure if Reggie Jackson is the right player at point guard for them, but we shall see. The East is a lot tougher than what it has been in years past, so they're no guarantee of even making the playoffs this season.
Oh, well, no, there's not. You know, yeah, probably the weakness for Detroit is their point guards, in particular. Yeah, Reggie Jackson is, he's shown some talent, but he's got a lot of the injury history, and Ish Smith, good backup, but he's not really an outside shooter, so guys just, you know, they go under picks, and it could be a real challenge for him to create. You know, so Yeah, that's their challenge. And now Blake, he is an excellent passer though. So it may give him opportunity to loosen up the offense a bit, but it seems like they're definitely at least one or two pieces, short.
I wish they kept Avery Bradley. Cause I think Avery Bradley could have been, cause he played point guard a lot when Rondo was injured or was traded from the Celtics. Now, had they found a way to keep Avery Bradley instead and maybe trade Reggie Jackson instead, cause they're both the same age, I think that would have worked out perfect for them. That being said,
I'm not sure about that. I mean, Reggie is definitely more of a point guard, pure point guard. And Avery Bradley, he can probably bring the ball up, you know, and he can make the first pass, but he's not a creator. He's more of a 3-and-D guy who can not turn the ball over, you know. So I don't think that would have solved their problem.
Well, the point that I'm making is I would prefer the ball in the hands of Blake Griffin than Reggie Jackson's. So if I've got the choice between Avery Bradley, I can have someone that can shore up the defense on the perimeter. He's a little bit more consistent of a 3-point shooter. And you're right. He can't score as consistently well as a Reggie Jackson or create as well as a Reggie Jackson. But I'd rather the ball in the hands of Blake Griffin and let Blake Griffin create for others. Let's see him in that role. But I do see what you're saying, though. Like, Reggie Jackson does bring some strengths. I just don't want to see another situation. Remember, people said that Chris Paul and Blake Griffin didn't coexist because Chris Paul needed the ball in his hands. Reggie Jackson needs the ball in his hands, too. So is that creating another situation almost to the one in L.A.?
Yeah, well, I think that Reggie is not, he's had health issues as well. It sure sounds like, look, it might be fun on paper, but I think they're going to struggle.
Right. I think this trade will have bigger ramifications for the rest of the league because now, as I said, it's pretty much a fire sale. You mentioned DeAndre Jordan. The obvious location for him would be to go to Cleveland. I've been saying this pretty much all season that Cleveland's had their eyes on him. And if they're willing to trade Blake Griffin for Harris and Avery Bradley and a first and second round pick, as well as they traded that 7'5" guy, or whatever was his name?
Boban.
Something, yeah.
Marjanovic.
There you go. The knowledge machine, Matt Hanley. And maybe we should call you Rain Man. If they're willing to give up Blake Griffin for that, then what are they willing to part ways with DeAndre Jordan for? All of a sudden, would they take Cleveland's spare parts?
Well, possibly if it's attached to the Nets pick, but the Nets are playing reasonably well. It's not like they're bottom of the league at the moment, so how valuable is that? Although I did see with Blake Griffin, Detroit gave them a top four protected first for, I think it's top four protected for the next 2 or 3 years.
Right. But I look at it, okay, they've given up a number one pick, right? And it says, even if they don't make the playoffs, as chances are that will be in between the picks of, say, 8 to 14. That's not a really valuable pick. In the NBA, you've got to get a top five pick to really be guaranteed of getting something. And even then, you're not really guaranteed of anything because of the one and done rule. I don't know if you, as I said, you look at what they gave up to part ways with Blake Griffin. They didn't have to get a super valuable draft pick in return. That Brooklyn pick is worth a lot more than the Pistons pick. I get what you're saying. Brooklyn's playing a lot better than people. People thought that was almost another guaranteed number one pick again. That's not the case. But I'm not sure if, Brooklyn's still probably a top five or bottom five, bottom six team in the league. So there's chances that pick will be worth quite a lot. Cleveland, I don't think Cleveland will ever part with that pick unless if LeBron agrees to stay for the next 2 or 3 years. That's their one bargaining chip. That's their one rebuilding chip that they can say, okay, we can at least draft a player and get the ball moving a bit on that rebuilding process. We don't have to tank an entire season in order to get a good young player. But
the funny thing about that is this is the same team that picked Anthony Bennett number one overall, a different GM.
That's true, but you know what? They also drafted Kyrie Irving number one overall, and nobody saw this out of Kyrie Irving.
Considering he only played like 10, 12 games at Duke.
Yeah, he was essentially a role player at Duke. He wasn't a superstar. So, you're right. They did draft pretty badly, but they've also knocked it out of the park sometimes as well.
Well, look, I've been thinking about it. It seems to me that by not trading that pick, that it's pretty much guaranteeing that LeBron is gone. And I might as well, while you've got the opportunity, you may as well just push all in and do the best you can while you've got them. It doesn't seem to me, fact of the matter is Cleveland hadn't won, the city hadn't had a champion in over 50 years?
Yeah, since Jim Brown.
Since Jim Brown. So, yeah, they are essentially playing with house money, but while you got LeBron on your team, you may as well do your best.
Yeah.
Make a run for it. Put the best team you can get out there. Now, if only they had, told LeBron to keep his GMing to himself and, you know, they've made some really sad decisions.
That he controls the franchise?
Well, it's a bit like they've enabled him, you know, but I know you agree with that.
Of course I do.
You know, the fact of the matter is, he's a bit like, he's the chosen one, you know,
he's had people in his ear.
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure. You know, he's been treated a certain way.
He's anointed, yeah.
Like his, shit don't stink.
Pretty much, he can't do no wrong. Of course. But the thing is, right, if you're Cleveland, what do you do, right? I get what you're saying. You've got a situation where you've got LeBron until the end of the season. You got Dwayne Wade. You got a bunch of players that are built around LeBron. The entire team's built around LeBron. And let me guess, when he leaves again, it's all going to it's going to come down again, right? So my point is though, even if they bring in DeAndre Jordan, are they back to championship contending, contender? They are better. I'll give you that they'll be better, but is that enough?
I tend to think no. DeAndre is really good in certain things, but he's good at defending other big centers. He's good at taking up space. He's a great teammate. You know, he does a lot of stuff well, but will he be able to help against Golden State or Houston if either one of those teams come out? You know, they both love to spread the floor. Maybe Houston because of who's their center?
Capella.
You know, he likes the rim run. DeAndre may be able to help in that case, but I'm not sure what he's going to do if he's got to drift away from the basket, if he's going to make much of an impact. He's more comfortable in the paint. And he can't shoot free throws either. He's a terrible free throw shooter. So,
well, he should fit in with Cleveland there, right? But what I was going to say though, and this needs to be acknowledged. Remember, DeAndre Jordan tried to go to Dallas as a free agent.
I remember very well.
Yeah, and one of the biggest reasons he wanted to go was he wanted to get away from Chris Paul. He couldn't handle the chirping and the criticism. And the drama associated with playing with Chris Paul. How would he actually handle playing with Cleveland under that spotlight?
You know what's interesting? I saw something recently. I saw an article saying that DeAndre wants to go to Houston now, follow Chris Paul.
Wow.
So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, I'm not sure he knows what he wants. But if he's willing to, I don't know. Look, it's difficult to say. I'm sure for 1 year or a portion of a year, but the question is whether he puts them over the top. And I'm
maybe in the East.
That he does.
Maybe in the
East.
Maybe
in the East, probably.
Yeah.
But I was having a conversation with some friends today, about a trade that we had talked about. Let's say if Memphis decided to, it's funny that Clippers actually blew it up before Memphis did, considering they fired their coach.
Right. Yeah, no, you look at the records as well. Yeah, but anyway, go on.
Well, you know, I was thinking, what if by chance Marc Gasol comes available for a reasonable price? It would sort of make sense. You brought this up to me that he would fit in very nicely with that Boston Celtics squad.
Well, I said the Celtics. I also said the Wizards. I thought he'd be really good in the Wizards, especially in those pick and roll situations with John Moore. But the Celtics, my goodness, that's an almost perfect fit because Kyrie Irving, he's done a really good job at expanding his game. In Cleveland, he wasn't much of a distributor at all. It was mainly LeBron doing all that. And Kyrie Irving was, his primary role was to score. He'd get the ball, and when he would get the ball, he's looking to score pretty much every single time.
He was relegated to essentially a
role player.
A top level role player.
Yeah.
In Cleveland.
Exactly. And what we've seen him expand his game, but with somebody like Marc Gasol has the ability to create for others as well. And I'm not sure who Boston, I mean, I know Boston has a plethora of draft picks that they could throw Memphis's way that could make it look very appealing. And that would be beneficial for them because they're not going anywhere this year. I think that would be in both teams' best interest. Now, wouldn't it be great if for once we start seeing some of these Eastern teams get loaded up on talent rather than the Western teams? So, for example, Boston gets Marc Gasol, Cleveland gets DeAndre Jordan. Whew. Wouldn't that be great?
Well, you know, it sure seems to me that Cleveland's vulnerable this year. So any team that's got a shot, I mean, like we've talked, Toronto is, they look like they've got a very good squad. They're top five, both offensive and defense in the league. I mean, this is, that's pretty impressive. I know it's still early, but you gotta think that they're...
Well, we're past the midway point though, Matty.
Yeah, we are. We got another few months to go, but the way they're playing, you really gotta think that they've got a shot to at least get to the conference finals.
Yeah.
Wizards, they were almost at the conference finals last year. They just lack, they don't have enough depth. Yeah.
The thing that worries me about the Wizards is you're right. They were nearly at the conference finals last year when they were going up against the Celtics. The Celtics have improved. The Raptors have improved. Cleveland is still better than them marginally. I don't see where the Wizards have improved enough to make that leap to keep up with the Joneses. Now, if they get someone like Marc Gasol instead of the Celtics, then, well, I changed everything that I just said about them. I completely retract it. They would be right there with the Celtics and the Raptors and even the Cavs as legitimate contenders to come out of the East.
Well, yeah, I mean, they sort of messed up by giving, who's that center? That French?
Mahimi?
Mahimi. They gave him a pretty big chunk of money, and you know, as well
use
as having three guys.
Use that to get Gasol though. Gasol's making a lot of money. What you would be offering Memphis would be essentially draft picks. So you'll have to throw in contracts to make that trade work. So, from Memphis' standpoint, they wouldn't be interested in Mahimi, but they'd be interested in those picks.
I don't know what their pick selection is like.
Well, Boston has the Philadelphia pick, not the Philadelphia pick, it's actually the Lakers pick.
Right.
Which got bounced around, was from that Steve Nash.
And I just noticed this. The Lakers are two spots out of the playoffs in the West.
Okay. But that's still
Lakers, we just see that the Clippers, I don't know. I didn't look at it that closely, but thinking about, let's say the Clippers drop back, you know, there's definitely, that makes that pick a little less palatable, let's put it that way, a little less valuable.
Right, but is that pick more valuable than, say, Marc Gasol at this stage, considering that they're trying to rebuild as it is? Okay, so I'm looking now. Oh, dude, the Lakers are still 6.5 games back from the Nuggets.
Okay, well.
They're 20 and a half games back of Golden State, and the Nuggets are 14. And considering we're nearly at the 50-game mark, that's a big bridge to close.
Yeah, but wouldn't it be funny if the Lakers end up, if even on the cusp? I'm just thinking if the Clippers, what are they? Oh, wait, the Clippers were ninth, huh?
Yes, the Clippers are only half game back. I mean, you can throw them out there. They're not going to make it. But, you know, there's another guy in all this that we haven't talked about that could become very, very, very tradable, and that's Lou Williams. A lot of teams would be very interested in him.
Well, Woj has been saying that the Clippers are looking to trade him and DeAndre for good young prospects and picks.
Oh, boy. Can they package those guys up, though?
Why don't they just trade them
individually and say if they can get the Brooklyn pick and pretty much garbage from
Clippers. For DeAndre.
Then you trade Lou Williams for, say,
someone who needs card help.
Yeah, like say maybe Terrence Ferguson and a couple of picks from the Thunder.
Like we were talking about after that injury, look, the initial thoughts after Roberson got hurt. I mean, you know, it's a punch to the gut for that squad. But when I thought a little bit more about the components of that roster. You know, Terrence Ferguson has shown a lot of potential, you know, in limited time. He's a bit raw. Patrick Patterson hasn't played a whole lot, and he's definitely got, he's a guy who played really well for Toronto last year, and he can hit the outside shot. He plays good solid defense, and he's a good solid team guy. So losing Robertson's a big loss, but after I thought about it for a while, I get a bit of a gut feeling that OKC probably have a solution on their roster to overcome that situation. Now, I mean, I know I'm just sort of spitballing here, but I have a feeling like it's not such a big loss.
Well, a sort of season capitulating moment. I'll give you that. Obviously, they would prefer to have both Roberson and whoever they insert into the lineup. But what I do like is you can bring someone like a Patrick Patterson in, and I nearly called him Ruben Patterson just then. But Patrick Patterson.
The Kobe stopper.
Yeah, right. But they could bring him in, and you could go super big with Steven Adams, Patterson, Mello, George, and Westbrook. And what that would allow you to do is almost reminiscent of the late 90s Bulls, where if you switch anybody, you don't have to necessarily help out in the post. So if Ron Harper switched off Dennis Rodman's man, he was big enough and strong enough to actually guard a four by himself, like if it was Sean Kemp or whoever. And all of a sudden, you may have a similar situation because of how big the Thunder could be with Patterson now and a big front lineup. That they can dominate inside in terms of getting a lot of rebounds. I don't think scoring inside will be their strength, but they can get a lot of boards. Adams has already shown to be a very competent offensive rebounder, and that's one of his biggest weapons.
Yep.
And I look at it, well, I don't like the concept of, well, Roberson was really a swing player. We have to bring in another swing player. I don't like that. I would prefer to keep Ferguson coming off the bench in a role that he's comfortable. He's very young. Don't change his role when he's starting to become comfortable. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
True. So, let him develop.
Yes, absolutely. And Patterson, as you said, he's played big moments with the Rockets, and he's played big moments with the Raptors in the playoffs. He knows what he's doing out there. He's not going to be intimidated.
And that lets Carmelo swap back over to the three man.
Now, that may be a bit of a problem. Is Melo still quick enough to guard players out there on the perimeter?
Well, probably not.
But I think you could hide him, though. I think you could hide him on the defensive end because you could... There's very few teams, maybe only Golden State, that has the firepower that you could just... But even then with Golden State, you could... But then, it, like, you could put Melo on Draymond Green, but then you've got to put Patterson on Kevin Durant. That's not a good situation.
That's not going to work.
Yeah. So that's really...
Now, Paul George will have to guard KD, I think.
Okay, so who's on Klay Thompson then?
Well...
Melo?
Melo would be able to run around those screens, would he?
He'd probably run right through those
maybe
screens.
Maybe you can't really do... I don't know. Could you maybe just... Put him on Steph and just sort of live with it?
That's interesting. I wouldn't like doing that because Steph Curry has a way of making big guys look bad when they try to, guard him. But Melo, he's been around the block a few times. It's not like, Cantor trying to guard him on the perimeter. That's not that far-fetched. I don't like it, but given the situation, If I was coaching the Thunder, I would be tempted to play both Raymond Felton and Westbrook and then if they're playing against the Warriors, that is, and then have Felton running around those screens. Because even though Felton seems like a little fat point guard, he's not fat at all. He's just big. He seems almost like Derek Fisher. He has a way of navigating screens very well. And I don't see a legitimate post-up game from Klay Thompson yet. I mean, he may have one. We just haven't seen it yet. But I haven't seen that from him, and maybe you could get away with a smaller guy just, you know, being attached to his hip around the screens.
Yeah, that would make sense. But so you keep Westbrook on Steph. You, what's his name? The
Felton.
Guy you just said.
Felton. Yeah.
Paul George. I think Paul George would have to go KD.
Of course.
Yes.
You don't have any choice now.
Draymond, Carmelo could handle him.
Yes.
I don't know what Steven Adams is going to do, but he's enough. He can counteract, because of his offensive rebounding, which you mentioned, you know, that's something that Warriors, it's sort of like in 2016.
Yeah, maybe that's a better question. What are the Warriors going to do to counter him rather than how is Zaza Pachulia or Andre Iguodala going to hurt him?
Well, if he goes out there, I mean, he's played so well this year. I mean, I could see him making the Warriors account for him.
Oh, yeah, he's got a history of that. As you said, the 2016 playoffs, he was a big reason why the Warriors got up in that series so significantly. They couldn't keep
Thunder,
him off the glass.
Thunder got up in that series.
Oh, sorry, my apologies. But because they couldn't keep him off the glass and made them hesitate on helping.
Right.
Because I was so worried about keeping him off the glass. It wasn't Cantor really killing him on the boards. It was Steven Adams. And, I don't see that they've added anybody to really rectify that situation. Now...
Jordan Bell!
Oh, yeah, sorry. JaVale
McGee. Cash considerations, Jordan Bell.
Yeah, cash considerations. Can we just call him cash considerations? Speaking of the Warriors, now... I've got mixed feelings on them. I think they've improved a lot. And what I mean by that is offensively they're the same team. Defensively, they've added a new dimension. And this has been where I've been most critical of them, is they were just a jump shooting team. They could score more points than you, and that's how they would beat you. They didn't really care what the other team would do. But with the development of Kevin Durant defensively, and you've got Draymond Green, you've got Klay Thompson, who's a pretty good defender, you've got Andre Iguodala, who's still a decent defender at his age, Sean Livingston's a decent defender, Steph Curry's getting better, but still mediocre.
Don't sleep on Steph. He's solid.
Defensively?
Yeah.
No.
Look
at what Kyrie Irving did to him the other day. Kyrie Irving had like 12 or 14 or something like that.
But Kyrie does that all the time.
Yeah,
Kyrie's tough to do.
Yeah, but 12 or 14 is a different level. I mean, he's okay. Can you see Kyrie Irving going 12 or 14 against, say, Patrick Beverley if he was healthy?
Well, or even Russell. Beverley is a bulldog. I mean, he mainly is out there for his defense.
Okay, well, can you see Irving doing that to Russell Westbrook or Chris Paul? Not 12 or 14 or whatever it was. He only missed like three.
Yeah, but look at what Steph did. Steph went out and dropped 49. Sure. I mean, those guys were just going back and forth. So that was a hell of a fun matchup.
Look, I think Steph Curry's a sneaky contender for the regular season MVP. I think he's played very well offensively.
But especially coming back from injury.
Yeah, if you just look at his numbers coming back from injury, he's got to be the front runner for it. But I'm just talking about how the Warriors have developed defensively. And I think Steph Curry is probably still their weak link defensively. I still think though that there's a lot of teams out there, more teams out there than they've ever faced in their championship runs so far that are legitimate contenders. And I think it's fool's gold that people think that they're a foregone conclusion to win the title again.
Yeah, you know, it's so weird. I hear it all the time. Oh, there's no point in even trying. It's guaranteed. At least the next year or two, they're going to win the championship. And it's like, did you just start watching sports yesterday?
Right.
Yeah. How many times have we seen these sure things fall flat on their face?
There's no such thing as a lock.
Well, we've had conversations about this many times. Even the Bulls, that everyone think, oh, Michael Jordan, you know, Michael Jordan's been Michael Jordan. When you look back at it, Utah was very close to knocking them off both times. Phoenix was close too. It could have easily happened.
Yeah, probably the one time that it wasn't close was their first championship against the Lakers.
Yeah. That was their most dominant playoff run. Although you could probably say 96 was until they lost two games against Seattle. But leading up to those two games, they were like 14-1 in the playoffs. Something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, once George Karl figured out to put Peyton on Jordan, that was...
That changed the entire complexion of that series.
Great coaching.
Yeah, it took him the fourth game to realize, hey, I'm going to... Defensive player of the year here at my disposal. Why don't we put him on the best?
I wonder what would happen.
Yeah. Oh, it actually worked.
What a surprise.
Yeah. But getting back to the Warriors, who do you see as their biggest threat? If you had to pick one team.
Well,
I'll give you two. You can pick two.
Well, I mean, Rockets are the first name that comes to mind, but I'm still not. Look, I'm not ready to forget the collapses that Harden and Chris Paul have had in the playoffs up to this date. So both of them have a long history of that. However, if they've solved it, if they got their head around it, it's quite possible. They've got the talent, they've got the system. They could be a very serious threat. Now, I also like, Oklahoma, they're like an all-star team, even with losing Robertson. But, you know, just those three together, especially Paul George and Westbrook, of course, with Steven Adams in the paint.
You haven't even mentioned Melo. Yeah, there you go.
Well, he's, in my mind, he's like icing on the cake. The main drivers there.
Yeah, he's the team right now. Adams has supplanted him as,
absolutely.
Which is odd to say. What I like about the Warriors, is they play with even more pace than what the Warriors do. When they play against Golden State, you see Golden State trying to slow the ball down a little bit. They're like, whoa, let's not get into a shootout with these guys. Let's try and slow it up with them. I think the biggest concern with me isn't Chris Paul or James Harden, because I think they complement each other well, which is a testament to Chris Paul, because he went in there trying to complement James Harden rather than trying to force the entire team to go around him. So kudos to Chris Paul. But what has me concerned is D'Antoni. Is D'Antoni going to be like the Andy Reid of NBA coaches and just freeze in the big moments like he has in so many big moments in his playoff coaching history? That to me has me concerned. But they've got so much depth. It's ridiculous. From Eric Gordon to Ryan Anderson to Clint Capella, who could have easily been an all-star as well. We talked about how Steven Adams could have been. So could Capella. Trevor Ariza. You know, they have, and of course James Harden and Chris Paul, they have about, what, 5-6 guys that any given night could easily go for 20 points. And they have defensive firepower that they can throw at Golden State. Now there's a couple of teams. Yeah, sure. Tucker as well. PJ Tucker. But there's a couple of teams. You've mentioned the Thunder, and I agree with you with the Thunder. It's good to see Paul George realizing that he can't really play the same role that he played in Indiana, and he's really tried to be essentially like a Scottie Pippen, fill up all the holes. Okay, we need good perimeter defense, I'll give that to you. You need rebounding, I'll give that to you. You need outside shooting, all right, sure, I'll start shooting a little bit more. I like seeing that. But there's a team that you didn't mention that I think is starting to emerge, even though they've struggled a little bit the last 10 games, and that's Minnesota. I think they've got all the defensive firepower to really put the clamps on a team like Golden State. And I think they could, in addition to that, when you have a guy like Karl Anthony Towns who can hurt them inside, I like what they're doing. And then, of course, you throw in Thibodeau, or however you pronounce his stupid name.
Thibodeau.
Thank you. There you go. I should just get that as a soundbite and just play it. But he's a defensive guru. He knows what he's doing on that end.
2008 Celtics, as well as 2010 again.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he was coaching him then in 2010, but that
Well,
team,
they still had the same principles. Yeah.
So who's your pick to come out of the West? Is it still Golden State or?
Yeah, it's still Golden State. When it comes down to it, the playoffs are one thing. Regular season, you know, whatever results happen, it really, in the playoffs, you have the coaches have an opportunity to scheme and really drill down on an opponent's tendencies and really take away what they like to do.
Allow me to interrupt you there just 1 minute. Do you think the Golden State has a good coaching staff that it is able to do that? Have we seen that from them yet? Or has it just been, okay, we're going to outscore you. And they never really adjust their gameplay. Even when they were down 3-1 to the Thunder, they didn't really change their defensive philosophies or the way they played. They just got bailed out by Klay Thompson having probably the greatest playoff shooting performance of all time. I just don't see them having the ability to counter, and some of these teams they have to counter. They can't just go in and do what they're accustomed to doing.
Well, certainly they can game plan. You know, but I think the fact of the matter that they've won two of the last three championships indicates that they have at least the capability to formulate a game plan and stick to it. Now, losing in 16, there's many factors that go into that, but they're certainly not the worst coaching staff out there.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't trying to say that. What I was trying to say, when they did win, how many times did they, and I'm not trying to say that they're a super lucky team, but how many times did they run into a team that was a deer in headlights or they were decimated by injuries? Whether it was the Cavs with Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving getting hurt, or the Rockets when they had Jason Terry, who was about 38 years old, trying to guard Steph Curry because Beverly was injured, or the Grizzlies, they had Mike Conley was injured for most of that series. The series against the Pelicans, I think Drew Holiday was injured. Last season, of course, the Kawhi Leonard injury. I mean, how many times is that going to happen And we get, like, I would love to see them have to go through an entire playoff run where they're facing healthy teams. Consistently good, healthy teams. And this is the scary thing if you're a Warriors fan. If the playoffs were to start today, they would play the Nuggets in the first round. Yeah, okay, that would probably be a sweep. I'll give you that. In the second round, the 4-5 matchup is the Timberwolves versus the Thunder. So that's whoever comes out of that is going to give the Warriors all that they can handle because of the way that they can defend on the perimeter. Either one of them, assuming they're healthy, of course, Roberson's not going to be healthy now if you're the Thunder, but they'll have time to readjust. It's not an injury during the playoff series. Either one can really shake them up. Assuming that the Warriors get through that series, then they're probably going to have to go through either the Rockets or the Spurs. More than likely, it will be the Rockets. I don't know if they're going to, because as I said, I've yet to see them consistently go through teams where they haven't had playoff advantages.
What injuries did Cleveland have last year?
That was one team.
Yeah, well, it was the championship. They handled it pretty effectively.
Well, I mean, Cleveland was pretty much fool's gold last year as well because they went through a pathetic Eastern Conference. I'll be the first to say the East is much better this year. But last year, you know, they rolled through that. And then I think people were a little bit enamored by the way that they were winning games against that weaker conference. And Cleveland was exposed. Now, talent-wise, yeah, but this is, as I said, want to bring up Cleveland. How about we bring up the Spurs? The Spurs were rolling against Golden State until Kawhi Leonard got injured. Do you think that's a sweep if Kawhi Leonard doesn't get injured?
Probably not.
It's probably a 6-game series.
Possibly.
So,
that's not a very talented squad, San Antonio. They're not that. He's a wizard or something, I swear. Popovich just.
Gandalf. Can we call him Gandalf?
Might as well. He just seems to always get the best out of, D-League, G-League players and young guys. I mean, the guy he's just remarkable, the coaching job Popovich pulls off every year. But you look at that squad on paper.
I'll never forgive him for benching Duncan. I'm sorry. Every time I hear his name and people compliment him, I'm just like, man, have you seen, do you know what happened in 2013?
Well, that's one play. You gotta look at the entirety of his career and what he's done.
It was
done.
Actually two plays, but yeah.
Yeah, well, the main one was Duncan not being in and enabling Bosch to tip it out to Ray Allen, sure.
But it happened on the play.
You gotta look, don't let 30 seconds sour you on the guy's entire career. As a coach.
Will we do that with a player though?
Well, look. People are human. They make mistakes.
Yeah, I know. All right. You've caught me out. I just don't like the guy.
I'm surprised by that.
Yeah. But my point though was getting back to Golden State is I want to see how well they are at countering a team. You know,
absolutely. You're right. I'd love to see them, I'd love to see that happen. I'd like to see them challenge when the chips are down.
Now, the only example people can throw at me is really the series against the Thunder, but as I said, they didn't really change their style of play. Klay Thompson bailed him out of that situation by shooting the lights out in Game 6.
And Kevin Durant kind of choked.
As did Westbrook. They both had terrible games in Game 6.
Yeah.
So you're still rolling with the Warriors though to win, yeah?
Hey, you gotta beat the champ to be the champ.
That's, what is that, a Ric Flair moment or?
Woo!
Yeah, I was waiting for that. I knew that was gonna come. Alright, mate, so, before you go, I'd like a prediction from you. Where do you think DeAndre Jordan will end up?
Oh, look, considering the haul that they got for Blake Griffin, which is frankly pretty disappointing for a max contract guy. All the talk has been Cleveland. I'm not sure he's the man to put him over the top, but where else, who else could use a sort of a defensive minded center, you know, like
New Orleans maybe.
Let's talk about them before you go. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, everyone's forgotten about the
I don't know, man. Jeez, that's such a strange situation. I mean, look at, I mean, he's, Boogie's due a new contract next year. Probably gonna get a max. They still got, AD another year locked up. So there's no need, in my mind, to blow it up. They've got time, you know, but, you know, I don't know what they're going to do with this contract situation, but I would be really surprised. I don't see them tanking. Right? I just think they're just going to keep playing as best they can and try to play out the string. That's another team the Lakers could move up on as well.
Oh, dude, I know you're a Lakers fan, but you got to let that go. They're not making the playoffs.
I know. I'm just saying, like, in terms of the pick, that's the only thing. As long as we're not giving up, like, a once in a generation talent. If that pick falls
Joel
somewhere, generational talent, man. I'm telling you.
Look, I could see New Orleans blowing this up because we had this conversation the other night. And I put it to you that at what point does New Orleans, does the management at the Pelicans, do they start getting frustrated at the situation? They've had Anthony Davis for quite some time playing very, very productive, and yet all they've got to show for it is one playoff appearance in which they were swept. Granted, that was up against Golden State, but still, they were swept. And they bring in DeMarcus Cousins, and he's unable to get them into the playoffs last year. This year, they were looking great. They were looking as scary of a team as Oklahoma or Minnesota is looking, right?
Yeah.
And then, obviously, DeMarcus Cousins goes down. I still think the Pelicans can make the playoffs. They're in a position, they're what, 27-22. They're only two games ahead of the Clippers, but the Clippers are, as I said before, the Clippers are going to drop significantly. So they're a full 6.5 games ahead of Utah, who would probably be the biggest threat to steal their spot. But what I'm looking at is, do they think, one, Achilles injuries are very, very difficult to come back from. Doctors really haven't figured that out. It's not like a microsurgery on the knees, which the players usually come back quite effectively, unless if your name's Derrick Rose, from those injuries.
Well, ACLs as well, you know. What's his name from the Bucks is going to be back on Friday after what is... Who?
Isn't it Parker?
Yep, that's right. Yeah. I mean, how many has he had? Isn't this his third ACL tear?
I'm not sure. I haven't kept count of it. But I'm saying that the Achilles is pretty much... It's almost like a death sentence athletically.
The only guy who's really come back strong, from my recollection, is Dominique Wilkins.
Well, he had to change his game. Athlete, though. Yeah, you're right. He had to. It was completely. And Bernard King had to do the exact same thing. It took him a few years before he was able to do it. Now DeMarcus Cousins, how does he change his game? You know, he's not exactly the most mobile player out there, as it is. I mean, he's a very powerful guy.
He's not exactly a leaper either.
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe that works in his advantage. Maybe, you know, it's his weakness already. So, I mean, maybe we should be more concerned with someone like Blake Griffin. But regardless, my point is they may have concerns as to, even if they hold steady and they say, you know what, we're going to wait till Cousins returns. We'll give him the contract. We'll keep this roster all intact and then we'll make another run with it. But what if DeMarcus Cousins is only 65% of what he was? Is that team good enough then to challenge? Probably not.
And I guess that's what you have to keep in mind. You know, you have to ask yourself is, what can we do with this core? And Drew Holiday's played really well this year.
Sure.
Anthony Davis is Anthony Davis. He's elite. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, why don't...
all I'm saying to you is it wouldn't surprise me if they traded Anthony Davis and they blew it up as well. It wouldn't shock me in the slightest.
I just don't see why they would do it now.
Because they still have the Cousins.
Well, yeah, but they've got AD for another year. Him and AD, DeMarcus and AD are tight. That's well known. They're good. They're like best friends. I don't know.
But if you're blowing
it up,
you're not going to keep either of them. If they're going to blow it up, they're not going to. If they trade Anthony Davis, they're not going to be interested in keeping DeMarcus Cousins as well. So that they're looking to rebuild and move on.
Well, do you think they're going to start tanking?
Yeah, well, I didn't say that. I'm saying it wouldn't surprise me if they start to. I think they're good enough to make the playoffs still. As I said, they're 6.5 games from their top competition in the Jazz to make the playoffs. So they've got a bit of a buffer there. And I think they're a better team than Utah, even without Cousins. So I like their chances of holding and making the playoffs. But they have to, is that good enough for them? Or do they want to contend?
If they make the playoffs this year after this injury, I think that's pretty good.
Well, what about the Clippers, though? The Clippers were on schedule to be right there. I mean, as I said, they weren't. And all the injuries that they had, I would have thought that would have been even more impressive.
Oh, well, yeah, absolutely. I have no idea why they decided to tear it all down. I mean, it's very odd. Very odd. Unless they think LeBron's coming to town.